At the beginning of September, the Prime Minister of Japan announced that he was standing down and that the ruling party, the Liberal Democratic Party, or LDP, would hold an election to choose his replacement. This man or woman would then lead the party to the national election in November. Not much local coverage of this upcoming election, although it's coming at a critical time for Japan. The country is facing economic stagnation, rising tension with China, as well as pressure for the country to modernise. So we thought it was time to look at why Japan is at this tipping point and to have a look at the candidates in the election later this week. To discuss these issues, we welcome back to the program LNL regular Roger Pulvers. Roger is a Japan expert and author of My Japan, a Cultural Memoir. And we also welcome Koichi Nakano, who is Professor of Politics at the Sophia University in Japan. Koichi, to you first, just to, so Australians understand this clearly, we're talking an absolutely classical constitutional monarchy, aren't we?
Well, Japan is a constitutional monarchy with a bicameral parliament, but in this case, it's only an internal election within the ruling LDP, and so ordinary voters do not have a say in it. It's only about 1% of the population, those people who are members of the LDP, who vote.
Why did the Prime Minister decide to step down?
Well, I guess he saw the support levels go down very sharply, and he initially tried to stay on and face the presidential race of the ruling LDP, even if the rivals emerged to challenge his leadership. But his image was very much tarnished by being seen as single-mindedly pursuing the rather unpopular Olympics and Paralympics over the summer and not paying sufficient attention or putting in enough resources to fight COVID, according to the view of a lot of people here. And so if he was to contest in the presidential race, given the power balance within the party, it seemed like he may be just defeated. And so instead of facing the humiliation, which was rather undesirable for him and for the party, he decided to make way to let fresh faces contest for his position.
Now to you, Roger. Perhaps we can start with you explaining how the election takes place.
Right. Well, there are 764 votes in total for this selection process in the first ballot. That is the 382 LDP MPs and 382 votes of party members from the 47 prefectures. So this is a fairly new reform in the party, which gives more voice to people the members around the country. And Kono Taro, who's probably the leading candidate of the four now, is the most popular with these people around the country, particularly after he got the support some weeks ago of Ishiba Shigeru, who is also very popular, who decided not to run and throw his support to Kono. So if Kono wins on the first ballot, which is looking very unlikely now, 3 days, the selection takes place on Wednesday. If he wins on the first ballot, half of those 764 total votes, he will be the next Liberal Democratic Party president and the next prime minister. But if he doesn't, then there will be a runoff between him and one of the other three candidates. And in that case, on the second ballot, the number of people around the country voting will not be 382, but only one from each prefecture, which will be 47, which will make the popular vote less important and the internal politics of the party vote much more important, and that will go against Kono. So that's how it's working. And it would be important to say, Philip, at this point, that the presence of Abe Shinzo, the former prime minister, looms very large within the party, particularly for this selection process. I mean, it's a little bit like Trump in the Republican Party, not exactly the same, but equivalent. He wants to protect his legacy for what it's worth, and it's not worth very much. And he wants to avoid indictment for corruption. So he wants to put in his person, and that person is probably not Kono. So it'll be a runoff between Kono and another person who will represent the conservative or reactionary forces within the Liberal Democratic Party on the second ballot.
Koichi, he's quite a fascinating character. For example, he's at 58, he's pretty young, and he comes from, party royalty.
Right. So, he's actually one of the many siblings of former prominent politicians, also in the LDP. So his family name, Kono, is, I think, better known than he himself because of his father, who is associated with the Kono statement that was about Japan's apology on the comfort woman issue, the so-called sex slave issue, back in 1993. So Kono was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. And so in that sense, he's not different from Abe Shinzo, the former prime minister that Roger just talked about. And he's one of the many scions of political dynasty. But he was educated in the U.S. He graduated from Georgetown University, and he speaks very fluent English. He's also a bit of a maverick within the party, although I would say a little bit, not hugely. But he's in the past, at least, he was vocal against his vocal in opposition against the nuclear power generation in Japan, which, of course, is a very important issue that many conservatives within the LDP would not want the party to change policy on. And he's also been something of a basher or an enemy of the bureaucrats as he introduced digitalization or as he tried to cut red tape. But he's a little bit afraid by those people who are not quite willing to see the change in the status quo.
I understand that he's also a skillful user of Twitter.
Right, skillful, including blocking a whole lot of people. Quite frankly, I'm also blocked, I found out one day. I don't even follow him, but I guess he actually proactively check people who are not making very flattering comment about him, and he preemptively block people. And so it's a bit of a controversy whether he can use his tweet, because he's been a minister in the outgoing government in charge of vaccination program here, among other things. And he uses his own Twitter account to talk about the policy of vaccination. But some of us, like me, are banned from access to his tweet.
Roger, I hope you've been banned in the same way.
2.5 million, close to 2.5 million followers on Twitter. No, I'm not one of them. But, you know, he has an Australian connection. His wife, Kaori, lived in Australia up to year five in primary school. So this is an interesting connection. Koichi mentioned his BA from Georgetown University, and it's very interesting that all four of the candidates are so-called kikoku shijo, or returnees. All four of them have spent some part of their youth overseas, in the United States in general. So that's the first time that's ever happened. But one thing which makes this selection process different from any of the others that I've known in the more than 50 years I have a connection with Japan, and that is there's a tremendous media hype about this particular selection process. There's been online debates almost every day, and the variety shows have taken it up, so much so that Mr. Edano, who is head of the largest opposition party, the Constitutional Democratic Party, came out and says, "Now, come on, what's going on? Hello, we're the opposition here. You know, we have a voice as well." So there's, I think it's partly because of the sort of younger generation are all between late 50s and early 60s. And also the personalities are quite interesting, and they're all very forthright in bringing up various issues. So
Roger, let's look at the bloke who's coming second in the polls, Kishida Fumio.
Yeah. Kishida Fumio is interesting. He's from Hiroshima. He's 64 years old. He was former Minister of Foreign Affairs. He's very suave, well-spoken, spent 3 years at primary school in New York. And he is a conservative. I mean, they're all conservative. The only one who has any sort of liberal leanings is Kono. And Kishida is a member of Nippon Kaigi, which is an alt-right organization, and he's hawkish, but not as hawkish as Abe or Takaichi, who's the leading female candidate. He's against having a female on the throne. He's pro-nuclear energy. But the important thing is he's been very careful not to publicly waver on whether to reopen the investigation into Abe's school scandals. And so I think there, even Kono has of late in the last few days has sort of let it be known that he's not going to attack Abe. I think everybody's afraid that Abe is going to come back into the, I don't think he'll be prime minister again. So Kishida is much more of Abe's man than Kono is. And so if it goes to the second ballot, I have no doubt but that the Abe and the Aso forces, Aso Taro, who is the deputy prime minister and a very the most influential right-wing sort of deputy to, you know, a sort of slightly smaller Abe, that they would, no doubt, but they would muster forces against Kono, and probably Kishida would win on the second ballot. But, of course, that's something to see on Wednesday.
Koichi, there's two women in the running as well. Which is a first, and one of them is Takayuchi Sonai, and she's certainly setting herself apart.
Yes, indeed. She's been pushing, in fact, before she decided to run herself, Abe, to give it another go. And having seen Abe not quite ready to make another challenge, she decided that she's going to be Abe's candidate. And so she has taken a very conservative, very nationalistic, and perhaps even bordering on the belligerent in terms of defense posture. She's also even more than Kishida, as Roger mentioned, to the right in the on the issue of historical revisionism. And so in that sense, she's, you know, she's quite an unlikely winner, but she's actually doing better than a lot of people expected, largely because of Abe's support.
And Koichi, she's also very conservative on social issues.
Yes, indeed. She's against the legalization of separate surname for the married couples in Japan. Japan is about the only country in the world today to legally ban separate surname for legally married couples. And Takaichi stands very firm on this issue, like Abe does. The other female candidate is Noda, who's rather more moderate in terms of social issues, but policy-wise, she has failed to leave her own mark so far. She was also the last to decide to run, and her chances are so weak that even she herself admitted a couple of days ago that the winner is going to be somebody other than her, only to retract that comment the following day because I think she was scolded by her supporters.
Back to you, Roger. Now, this is a hot-button issue that could only occur in Japan, and that is permitting women to keep their surname when they marry.
Yes, I know. Well, right now they're not able to, but the feminist women in Japan, the growing movement, is they very much want to be able to do that if they so choose. But Takaichi Sanae is somewhat like a cross between Margaret Thatcher and Benjamin Netanyahu.
Oh, my God.
I mean, ladies, be careful what you wish for. She's, to add to what Koichi said, some other things, she has... She's against allowing women to keep their birth name after marriage. She wants to protect the male line for the emperor. She wants to reduce welfare. She's against raising the tax on tobacco. She's against recognition of the so-called comfort women, the sex slaves that the Japanese maintained during the war. And she's even come out, she's even said that she wants to reverse the 1995 apology for the war. I mean, this lady, she's from Nara, she's very traditional, but I'll tell you something, watching her on television, she's very charismatic, very well-spoken, and even though I don't think she is going to win this particular selection process, she's certainly upped her profile, and she would certainly be, would have to have a place in the cabinet, whoever wins. She's definitely somebody to watch and also to be wary of in the future.
Kochi, do you see any significant differences in the candidates in regard to foreign policy?
Well, there's, obviously, as Roger kept on saying, they are all conservative. And, of course, you know, Japan's basic policy in foreign affairs has been to follow the United States lead. And so in that regard, the hot button issue of China today is a very important one. But at the same time, of course, much depends on the United States. At the same time, though, among those people who are running in this particular time, Takaichi, I think, is the one who's probably making even people in Washington worry somewhat, because she sounds a little bit too much to the right and maybe even provocative.
Well, she wants Japan to go nuclear, which is about as provocative as you can get. Roger, Glasgow summit on climate change approaching. What does the future of Japan in the energy sector look like?
Well, Suga made the statement some months ago that that Japan would go carbon neutral by 2050. But the big, huge nuclear elephant in the room, and there's something that hasn't gotten much play in the Western media, is that this depends on upwards of 21 nuclear reactors being online in 2050 in order to maintain carbon neutrality. And so, climate change is a huge issue. And in fact, the issues that are before the Japanese people, and they've shown to be really concerned about, are first economics and COVID and social issues like climate change. And the smallest issue of all for the, according to a recent survey by the Asahi Shimbun, is security and diplomacy. So they're very concerned about climate. And also something which has relevance for us, Philip, is that Kono made a statement that I was really shocked by a couple of days ago, where he came out for nuclear-powered submarines. So I think we may not only be in for AUKUS, I think we're going to be in for JAUKUS now in the future if this comes about. And it seems as if the nuclear allergy that was so strong, and it kept Japan from accepting any nuclear weapons and any sort of nuclear ship visiting Japan, that this is breaking down when somebody like Kono does this.
And, Roger, we've got to wind it up. And on that happy note, I thank you. Roger Pulvers, LNL regular and Japan expert, and author of My Japan, a cultural memoir, and Koichi Nakano, Professor of Political Science at Sophia University in Japan. We shall watch the election with heightened interest.